Well, Peter O'Donnell, we're here in your home in Tralee. You're just back from Los Angeles, where you buried your uncle.
That's correct. He passed away on Tuesday week last, on the 22nd of February.
And he held a great record because he was Kerry's oldest surviving All-Ireland medal holder.
That's correct, Weishi. He won his medal in 1941 with Kerry, and he was 92 when he died. He would have been 93 next month.
Now, tell us who we're speaking about and tell us where he came from and his family, Peter.
Okay, he was my uncle, Monsignor James Pearce. He was born in Balnorrig. He was the eldest of eight children. He was born in 1918. And he became a priest in 1944 and left for the States then. So he was there for 66 years.
Now, tell us about his family. How many were in his family and his mother and father?
His mother and father were Dan and Mary Pearce. Her maiden name was Diggins. And there was eight children. As I said, James was the eldest. My mother, Margaret, was the next. She was Margaret O'Donnell. And then there was Morris Pearce of Balnorrig. There was Rosaria Pearce, who became a medical missionary nun. There was Dan Pearce, who was still farming in Ballycarty. There's Father Tom Pearce, a brother of Father James, who served for a good number of years in the seminary in Killarney teaching, and then went out to do pastoral work. There was another sister, Irene, who was in the Holy Faith Convent, and she died at a young age of 25. And then there was a younger brother, Patrick, who died as a result of an accident when he was 11 years of age.
What do we know of the young James Peter, if anything? What do we know about him growing up, and how did he get involved in the football, and what schools did he go to?
As far as I know, he went to the CBS for a number of years, and then he went on to the seminary in Killarney, I think in 1932 or 33. He was seemingly, when he was very young, he was a tremendous hurler, and hurling was actually his first love. And but I think Gaelic was the Mitchell's way of things, and that's what he played mostly.
He won his first medal, as far as I know, in 1936 when St Brendan's won the Munster Colleges.
That's correct, yeah, 1936. I don't know who they actually beat in the final, but I know that they beat Dingle in the Kerry part of that championship. And on that Dingle team would have been Paddy Bond, Brosnan and Bill Casey and a lot of those players. And in 1937 then, he won a county championship with John Mitchells, playing full forward. And then he was on the junior scene, and he played senior for Kerry as well. And in 1941, he won both a junior and a senior All-Ireland medal with Kerry.
When he'd be home on holidays, Peter, he'd stay with you here and he'd call you. Would he talk about those footballing days or any memories that you have that he might have passed on to you?
Well, he would, of course, wish, and he was very proud of his past in the GA, but he wouldn't be a person that would be pushing it forwards very much, if you know what I mean, you know. But he was certainly very proud of his Kerry past, and he loved going to the matches, both with the Mitchells playing and the Kerry teams as well.
Now, as we said, originally you mentioned there, he won a senior All-Ireland in 1941, and he was also on the junior panel when they won the All-Ireland in 1941, so he was on both of them. The 1941 win, now, he did not play in the championship, he was a sub in all the games, we know that, but the medal that he won, and up till the time of his death, as I said, he was the oldest surviving All-Ireland senior medal winner living for Kerry. What became of that medal? Where is it now?
Okay, that we brought that medal home from Los Angeles along with the County Championship medal and the Munster Colleges medal. And they're now in the possession of a relation of mine, Daniel Pearson, Barry Carty. And he's about 16, 17, and he's very much into sports.
That's it, that's a valuable medal. Now, his priestly duties, when did he was ordained in, and where did life bring him, Pete?
He was ordained in 1944, and he went to the States during the war, and it took him quite a long time to get to Los Angeles. And I reckon the reason that he went to Los Angeles was because his uncle, Monsignor Patrick Pearce, was a parish priest there, and he lived until 1962. So they had 16 or 17 years together there. So I think that probably relieved a bit of the home sickness, because they didn't, in those times, they didn't come home too often, only every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, he had a long journey in 44, because he sailed from Cove down along the west coast of France to the Azores, and then across the Atlantic to New York, and then he had to wait to go. Why did he pick Los Angeles? Or was he signed to there, Peter? I presume he was.
No, I think the reason he went there, I think, was because his uncle was there before him, you know, and that probably, to my knowledge anyway, would be the reason, you know.
Yeah, of course. There was a big, huge Irish community in San Francisco out around those times. That would have, he'd have met a lot of those people and had a lot of relationships with all of those people.
That's correct, yeah. I think most Sundays he would actually go up to San Francisco to play, because there was no club scene in Los Angeles at the time. And he played with several of the clubs in San Francisco. And then, as far as I know, in the early 50s, he formed a Gaelic team in Los Angeles himself. And we have a photograph of that. He was, I think he was playing corner forward. He would have been in his 40s at that stage. So that's, he was still playing up to that point anyway, you know.
To form a football team, a GAA team out in Los Angeles, Peter, showed that he had a tremendous love for the GAA. Mm. Is the team still there? Is the club still there? Do we know what happened?
I don't know if I appreciate to tell you the truth, but there is a strong Irish scene there. Like, you know, yeah. Even at his funeral now, we met loads of Irish priests. And there still is quite a community there. I don't know what the GAA scene is there, though, you know.
You mentioned earlier on there that he was a great hurler, that he loved hurling. Maybe he told you one time he'd preferred even hurling than the football. And the hurling really stood to him, because he took up golf, which would be natural out around there anywhere, and he became very prolific at the golf. He was a scratch golfer.
But he was close to it. I don't know exactly what his handicap was. He wasn't that far off being a scratch golfer. But I've heard from a few different sources now that he had a tremendous swing. And even when he was playing hurling, that it was, I've never actually seen him do it, but he was reputed to be able to drive a slitter 100 yards with one hand. And I don't know how anybody could do that. But he had a tremendous long drive. And I think in the Riviera Club, Golf Club in Los Angeles, for 30 years he held the record of the longest drive. And he was tremendously strong. And I caddied for him several times in my teens, and he put one of us to shame anyway. Like, you know.
When did he become a Monsignor?
I think he became a Monsignor, I think, around 1984. I'm not too sure of that now, but I think it was around that time when he got his last parish in Seal Beach.
Yeah, the year that Kerry won the senior in our Ireland, right, in 1984. And I would imagine, Peter, that he had a very strong faith, and he had a tremendous love of God, and he practiced all that in Los Angeles and spread the gospel.
That's correct. That was his first love, and he was very, very much, straight down the line Catholic priest. And He really had a huge trust in his faith and in love of God, and he tried to instill that in all of us, you know.
How often would he come home? How often would he come here to Tralee, to Kerry, and what would he do when he came home? When was his last trip home, Peter?
He was home last year. He has come home every single year since the early 60s, and he would come home and he would spend about 3 months here, and quite a long holiday, and he would be with Father Tom, and the two of them would play quite a lot of golf, and he'd golf with all his friends outside the Tralee Golf Club, Paddy Carey and Jack Lawler and all of those, you know. And he had a tremendous love of golf. He'd play golf 7 days a week if he had a chance, like, you know.
When he was home, and even when he was in Los Angeles, did he keep up to date with the football? And when he'd come here, would he go to see his old club playing?
Well, he would, of course. I went to several Mitchell's games with him down the years, and he was in Croke Park, because I suppose, being the medal holder, he was entitled to have the 280 tickets, like, and stuff like that. And loads of times we went to Croke Park. I remember being with him in 1975, now when Kerry beat Dublin. And at half-time, he didn't think Kerry would do it, but Kerry did come out on top that day, like, you know. So we've a lot of happy memories as such, like, you know.
You have. Yeah. So you mentioned the medal again. Remind us again where this All-Ireland medal is now.
He'd be second cousin of mine, the Daniel Pierce. He's 16 or 17, and he's living in Ballycarty. And his grandfather, Dan, who was over with me at Father James's passing away, we decided that was the best place for the medal to go, like, you know.
Now, he was also a little bit of a poet, because he wrote a very, what became in Los Angeles, a very famous prayer. It was called the Golfer's Prayer. Okay. How did that come about?
There was a famous Scottish golfer, I think his name was Willie Hunter, and he was the professional at the Riviera Golf Club where Father James used to play. And I think around 1964, thereabouts, he retired as from being a golf professional. And Father James was asked to give the invocation, so he composed this golfer's prayer. Yeah. And I have it printed out for you there.
You have indeed. Yeah. And do you know what we'll do? In his memory, we'll record it here now.
Okay.
O Lord, this game I play, symbolic of human life, with a first tee filled with youthful promise, and the last put charged with eternal destiny. Check my grip on the good book, fashion my stance on the golden rule, mould my motion in the habit of virtue, groove my swing in the path of self-discipline. Direct my shots down the middle of life's fairway, preserve me from mean hooks and fat slices. Protect me within the bounds of thy commandments, deliver me from the bunkers of temptation, sustain me with the vision of a 19th hole in an eternal tomorrow. When my last stroke is recorded on the final green of life, may I be judged worthy to receive the award promised to all true sports who compete according to the rules, your perpetual trophy, and each in the heavenly Hall of Fame. Amen. Yeah. Beautiful.
It's lovely. And he was very, very proud of that. And he used to give out little cards with the prayer on it, like, you know.
Well, I've no doubt, Peter. It's going out now in Terrace Talk, and we'll spread the gospel, of the Golfer's Prayer in Kerry.
He would really love that, you know.
Well, it'll be there. Now, tell us about you went to his funeral. As the fella said, did he get a big send off? I presume he did.
He did. Yeah, there was a great turnout in his. They held it in his own parish church. I think we counted up as either 28 or 29 priests, and there was two bishops there. And they asked me to say a few words of thanks and stuff. And I did a fierce job remembering all the names and titles and stuff, you know. But he did. He got a great send-off. And his remains will be coming home here to be buried at St. John's, at the back of St. John's. Now, we don't know the date as of yet, but it should be the next week or two anyway, you know.
Yes. So you let us know about that, where we can spread the word. Finally, how important is it to have a man like that remembered here back in his own place?
Well, very, very important. And as I say, it's a pity that we didn't do this before. And I even regret myself. I never wrote down a lot of the things that he used to talk about, you know, and probably when you're gone now, the stuff will come back to me, you know. But he was a tremendous man. We all looked up to him as we were growing up. And he was kind of a role model to all of us. And as I say, he was very much down the line a Catholic priest, and he had a great love of a country here and love of family, and he was always spurring us on to do better in our lives, you know.
Now, 50 years ago next year, the Kerry Under-21s won the first ever Munster Football Championship.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate enough to be playing. I was playing a wing forward that day. We beat Cork and Kilmare. But your brother, the late Roddy O'Donnell, great footballer, great basketball player, great friend of mine, died a young man, was playing full forward that day. Talk to me about Roddy, and he died very young, didn't he?
Yeah, Roddy died in 1985, January 85, following a Keep Fit session in the sports complex here in Tralee. We reckoned it was the sudden adult death thing, you know, and because he was very, very fit and everything he played. He used to play quite a lot of basketball right into his late 30s. But Roddy was a very good footballer as well. And he had an All-Ireland minor medal in 1962, yeah. I think they beat Mayo in the final, I think, yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
And say he played under 21, with you with the then and then as well. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And who was belonged to him? Then Roddy was married, wasn't he?
Yeah, Roddy was married to Helen, yeah. And they have two daughters, Mary and Sinead. Yeah.
Who else was in the family then, Peter? Your own family?
My own family is that. Well, I was the second boy, and my younger brother, Paddy, and Paddy O'Donnell, Pat O'Donnell, is known as well.
Yeah. So and, the football would have broken out on Roddy because, I mean, as we said there, he won an All-Ireland minor in 1962 and he won an under-21. Great footballer. So did the football break out for anywhere else?
No, I was never blessed with the coordination. I was more of a lover of the oval ball. I played a bit of rugby myself, yeah. And Paddy, the younger brother, he played Mitchell's as well, like, you know.
So this interview came about because it was your next door neighbour here, the great Seamus O'Mahony, yeah. The former head of sport on Radio Kerry, that put us in contact. Seamus is your neighbour all your life.
That's right. Well, for the last 10 or 12 years anyway, you know, as I'm a Mitchell's man myself, and I find myself up here in the heart of the Rockies. And we've Mikey Sheehy living across the road, so I have to keep the head down, you know.
Yeah. Well, Peter, listen to me. It was lovely talking to you. And I tell you, we'd be looking forward to see the Mancina's remains coming home and coming back to his native place. Mm-hmm. I suppose, naturally enough, his wish was to be buried back in Kerry.
Right, yeah. That's right. That was his big wish. And he wanted, if at all possible, to be interred with the priest down at the back of St. John's. And the Dean kindly has granted this, like, you know.
So there you have it, Mancina James Pearce, up until 2 weeks ago, Kerry's oldest living senior All-Ireland medal holder, died at the age of very close to 93. And, of course, the oldest living All-Ireland medal holder now, Peter, is the great Gus Crimmins, up there from North Kerry. Gus was 90, I think, in January or February, so he holds the mantle now.
Fair play to him. I hope he holds it for many, many years, you know. Yeah.
Lovely. Well done, Peter, and thank you for talking to me.
Not at all. I wish you any time. You're welcome, bye.